Good morning again. I'm Jay Vroom, Chairman of Crop Life Foundation, and welcome to our media briefing event following the presentation of the Borlaug Cast Communications Award. We're pleased to have substantial press interest and follow-up. I know there are a lot of competing events. As we said at the breakfast ceremonies, we at Crop Life Foundation and our member companies are extremely proud to be associated with CAST, as we have been for many, many years, really since the beginning, but particularly around this event, which we see as a particular important turning point, a strategic move forward with regard to our collective agricultural interests in doing a more complete and comprehensive job of communicating to publics everywhere about the important role of science and technology in helping feed a troubled and hungry world. So I'm pleased to also invite John Bonner of CAST to come forward and say a few words, get us started, and then we'll have our awardee and take some questions. John?
Thank you. Thank you, Jay. I'm happy to be here on behalf of CAST, the Council for Agricultural Science and Technology. We have almost a 40-year history of representing credible science produced by scientists on a volunteer basis, writing papers and publications to communicate. First paper was written by Dr. Norman Borlaug on ag policy and the public in 1973. Obviously, we haven't got all the answers there yet, but we are continuing to work in that area. And Dr. Borlaug actually wrote the last paper he wrote. Is on ag productivity for the future. All of these are available on the CAST website. We're very interested in communicating credible agriculture to legislators, regulators, policymakers, the media, and the public. Science in terms that people can understand, and science that comes without a bias as far as an agenda to complete it. So with that, the Borlaug Award, the Borlaug CAST Communication Award, is intended to give people a view of who will pick up Dr. Borlaug's message, who will continue to tell the story of agriculture, and we need many apostles to carry on from where we have started with Dr. Borlaug. With that in mind, we've made the presentation this morning to Dr. Keene Adesina, and we appreciate his participating in this meeting.
Thank you very much, Jay and John. And once again, let me say how truly honored I am to have been given this award, the Borlaug CAST Award. In particular, that this award was named after my hero, Dr. Norman Borlaug, who fed more people in the world than anybody since the living memory. So it actually places a lot of responsibility on my shoulders to continue to carry off the message that science and technology is very critical for addressing the problems of the poor and the excluded around the world, and in particular that we have to do more than science and technology. We've got to talk to leaders, political leaders, leaders in the private sector, leaders in the banking industry. We've got to talk to farmers, civil society. We've got to build, in a sense, an alliance that understands the role of science and technology. I come from the continent of Africa, where the challenge of feeding our continent is enormous. We have 300 million people living on less than a dollar a day. But I am also a very hopeful person because I know that poverty and hunger will not be national endowments of Africa. But for that to not happen, we have to do something about agriculture. So I look forward to discussing some of those views with you.
Dr. Adesina, the CAST Award, a world supported by plants and animals.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Is there questions? I'll take it. Bashful reporters. No. Dave.
Dr. Adesina, you talked a little bit about the lack of private investment. What is the role of business? Where does it have the opportunity to make the most impact?
Well, I think the starting point is the cost of doing business in Africa. For quite a long time, the cost of doing business in Africa had been high. There was a lot of barriers put on intra-regional trade, for example, in terms of contract laws, in terms of making sure that we have regulations that allowed private enterprise to develop in the agricultural sector. But that is now history. African governments have put up new laws and new regulations that are pro-business in agriculture. If you look at the investments in agriculture, foreign direct investment in agriculture has been rising, especially since 2007-2008 food crisis. You can see a lot of focus, and people talk about the so-called land grab situation. We don't look at it that way. We just see that there's a lot of interest, much needed interest, in African agriculture. The critical areas where I believe that private investments are needed in Africa today are in infrastructure. Africa has an infrastructure deficit, both in terms of energy, in terms of rural roads, in terms of investment in storage and warehouses, and also in terms of investment in irrigation. Less than 5% of Africa's arable land is actually irrigated. And so private sector investments are very much needed in those areas. But also crucial are investments in terms of commodity exchanges and market information systems that opens up the space for farmers to have access to information, to be able to trade their commodities, and to be able to meet grades and standards that are becoming increasingly relevant if you're going to participate in global trade. I also think that one other area where a lot of investments are needed, in this case, in supporting local entrepreneurs, will be in the seed sector, seeds. I think a lot of investments are needed to provide venture capital for local seed companies in Africa that can develop the right kind of seeds and market those to farmers. Of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention the whole issue around finance of the banks. You cannot get water out of the rock unless you're Moses. That's what, you know. But African agriculture absolutely needs financing for the banking sector. We have a situation where less than 1% of total private capital in Africa is going into agriculture, a sector that accounts for 45 to 60% of GDP and 70% of all employment. And so we believe that a lot of work is needed to reduce the risk of lending by banks, to build the capacities of banks to understand agriculture, to be able to develop new lending products, to be able to price the risk properly and their products properly, and to use innovative delivery platforms to get the technologies out, the lending out.
How would you project what you see as the adoption for new technology like biotech, for example, with crops, especially since we see, you know, things like drought resistance traits being developed, and what would be the challenges also?
Well, you know, African agriculture, you know, has particular challenges because the agroecological environments are very different from those of Asia, where the Green Revolution occurred. We have, you know, more than rice and wheat. And we also have dryland agriculture, so which means that problems of water becomes very, very important. Now, in terms of the role, therefore, for biotechnology, biotechnology can play a role in terms of dealing with seemingly intractable problems that and challenges that faces African agriculture. Drought is one. Enhancing nutrient use efficiency is one. Water use efficiency is one. Developing appropriate breeds of livestock is one, and also even conventional thing. Biotechnology tools, the simple source of, you know, tissue culture, for example, can dramatically open opportunities for African agriculture. Take the case of bananas, in Uganda, and also in Rwanda and Burundi. Tissue culture banana allows you to be able to plant, you know, your new plantlets. And the farmers are getting yields that are now about 30 to 50 tons per hectare compared to 10 tons they were getting before. if you look at drought tolerance in maize in East and Southern Africa, a lot of progress is being made with respect to that. The new rice for Africa, Nerica rice, which is now transforming the phase of African rice production, it's a, just a cross using anticulture between the Asian rice and the African rice. So the point I'm making is that Africa needs science, Africa needs technology, Africa needs the capacity to have the tools to address many of these seemingly intractable problems as they occur. And my organization, the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, is building that capacity for African scientists in national institutions to have the world-class knowledge needed to deal with these challenges.
I think you raised really an important kind of comprehensive answer, which is there is no one single answer, Dave, to your question, but all these things need to come together to work effectively. And I can speak from the crop protection industry's point of view that, you know, we've, I think, seen a gradual withdrawal from the continent of Africa over probably decades for a variety of reasons. But we now see our companies taking interest in partnering with some of these successful development initiatives because they are business oriented, as you've articulated, from an agri point of view. And we at CropLife Foundation have a herbicide demonstration project in the agri-dealer program under AGRA in three countries. One of the things that we've discovered is a limitation that there are not enough weed scientists to help support the infrastructure, to help the governments develop the capacity for better registration systems for herbicides. So it's a comprehensive answer, a series of solutions that all have to come together. But what you are representing and driving through AGRA with partners like CNFA and then benefiting CropLife Foundation's project are really great examples of how that traction is taking hold. Yeah.
Getting back to your discussion about global commodity markets and creating that infrastructure for people, for African smallholder farmers to get access to that, I'm wondering if you could comment a bit on global commodities markets in terms of some of the problems that crop, that price volatility has presented for Africa and African farmers, but then also how global commodities markets can be a solution to help get people plugged in for their own agricultural prosperity.
Well, let me start with the latter one, which is more the solution side. Global commodity markets are crucial for Africa to be able to export what it produces. Africa produces staple crops, but it also produces cash crops, be it cocoa, coffee, tea, cotton, and so on. So we absolutely need to make sure that the global commodity markets allow for lower barriers to trade for what is coming out of Africa. Currently, Africa accounts for roughly about 2% of global commodity trade. And there's no reason why that should be the case. We ought to expand that. There's a lot of, tariff and non-tariff barriers to trade out of Africa that needs to be removed. Second is, I think that it's important for a lot of trade enhancement initiatives to build the capacity of African farmers to meet grades and standards, which are becoming crucial if you're going to access many of these global commodity markets. A lot of what is happening in terms of infrastructure for trade, and so investing in roads, in ports, and so on, is going to allow Africa to take advantage of those particular things. But in terms of issue of volatility, I think I want to just talk about the what that means for the poor, because I really speak for the poor, is that if you look in terms of the global reserves that we have in terms of grains, in 2007, 2008, it was at an all-time low in terms of stocks. Now, this year, for example, I was reading the Financial Times on the plane about the spike again in terms of corn prices and what that means for majority around the world. What that means is that the global commodity markets are getting much more volatile. They are getting less dependable for countries to depend on. The markets are getting thinner, and therefore it means that it raises the risk and vulnerability for the poor. And it's not inherent in the markets themselves, but it's a lot of other factors. Climate change, in particular, plays a big role. So I think that for Africa, what Africa needs to do is to not just depend on food imports. Africa is spending $25 billion buying food right now. What it needs is a green revolution of its own, where Africa can produce its own food, where it can feed itself, and where it can generate surpluses that it can trade in those global commodity markets. And I believe that the way to do that is for Africa to first focus on the staple crops that it produces, you know, and that's what's going to really allow it to lower its import bill.
Forrest?
It seems like in past years there's been some reluctance to accept or adopt biotechnology. What's the situation in Africa now as far as farmer acceptance of biotech traits?
Well, you know, African farmers don't have anything against biotechnology. I think the biotechnology is a tool in which you address problems. The major issues have to do around with regulations, though. The regulatory environment being right, the capacity being right. And so what the Alliance for a Green Revolution, AGRA, does is, you know, we don't dictate what countries do, what their scientists use. But we build capacity of scientists to have the tools and the capacities to deal with challenges in agriculture. We also support the national governments to put in place regulatory systems for deploying new technologies, whatever those technologies might be. But I want to say that Africa cannot develop, using Stone Age technologies. Africa needs modern technologies to address its problems. The decisions on what technologies are used belongs to the government. But, in the world you live in today, if you decide you want to use a landline phone, when everybody's using Blackberries and stuff like that, you'll be far behind.
I do think Kenya's reasonably close to putting together a regulatory system for biotechnology adoption. So there's progress in a number of countries. CropLife International is working hard at helping those countries with infrastructure development in terms of regulatory capacity. A lot of the issues around trade with Africa and Europe that are also barriers. You talked about trade barriers. So those are all fronts that are being addressed, and there's no one single solution, of course.
Can you address the knowledge enhancement component and your vision of is there institutional development in terms of developing personnel and what that looks like and what AGRA's impact will be in that regard?
You know, the best resource that any nation has is its own human capacity, scientific capacity, because that allows you to push the productivity frontier outwards. And the way in which you're going to do that is to have very strong universities. And so AGRA, the Alliance for a Green Revolution in Africa, we are investing heavily in building our human capacity for Africa. Right now, we have a program at the University of KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa, which is training plant scientists for Africa, in Africa, at PhD level. We've expanded that program to Ghana. We have a West Africa Center for Crop Improvement, which is doing exactly the same thing, but for plant breeders in West and Central Africa. In addition, we are training over 10,000 technicians, technicians to be able to help farmers with looking at detecting nutrient deficiencies in the soil, being able to offer advice and so on. In addition, we just launched a PhD program for soil science in Africa to build the future capacity of soil scientists. AGRA has also launched with Columbia University a global digital soil map, which allows us to be able to monitor land use patterns and nutrient deficiencies, and therefore it's going to help a lot in terms of extension. On the policy side, I believe that what Africa needs is its own think tanks, not external think tanks thinking for it. And this requires then that we change the entire policy institutional setup in Africa to produce world-class economists and policy analysts that will come up with solutions that are relevant to the state of economic development in Africa, relevant to the needs of farmers, not things that people came out of textbooks and therefore project to Africa. I have said several times that structural adjustment was a disaster for Africa. You can see all the lessons out there. So what we are doing in Africa right now as AGRA is we are building a new policy, a new set of policy institutions where we are giving Africans the capacity they need to look at the challenges of agriculture, the policy instruments that are needed to deal with it, to look at local solutions that work, to share experiences among themselves, and to make sure that whatever is done within the confines of national budgets so that things can be sustainable. So I think that you cannot develop agriculture by simply looking for external advice. You have to develop that looking using local capacity. So we have a program at AGRA where we are training now 700 new policy analysts for Africa, a master's level. It's called a Master's in Agricultural and Applied Economics. We're doing it together with University of Cornell, Purdue University, several other leading US universities. World class, we are training today a Master's in Agricultural and Applied Economics for $22,000 a year compared to $70,000 in the US. And I can tell you the quality of the program is world class because our students are getting admitted to one of the best universities in the United States, passing GRE, passing GMAT, and getting full scholarship. So I really believe that we have to put behind the Green Revolution local talent.
Several years ago, I participated in a forum that FAO put on in Rome with rural communicators, mostly from African countries, talking about how do we get information out to the farmer, because in countries like the United States, we've got very well-established channels, publications, farm radio, etc. It seemed like the discussion centered around radio opportunities. How is communications going in terms of getting information out to the farmers in these rural areas? What is the methods and ways that you see that developing in Africa to communicate this technology, all this great information we've got?
Yeah, I think, as Jay said, this is one of the things where it's not one way. You have to use all tools to be able to get the information out of farmers. Let me start with one that is particularly close to my heart, which is the youth themselves, the children of farmers. You know, you can have a farmer who didn't go to school, but they have kids that have gone to school or that are going to school. And they understand the challenges of agriculture, the new solutions, the technologies. So we believe that we need to connect the youth to agriculture. And also because agriculture now is Africa is an aging population, we need to change the labor composition and get a lot more youth into agriculture. Second is farmers associations. The United States has very, very strong farmers associations. And in Africa, we are currently building efforts in AGRA. We are launching a program which is called Farmer Support Initiative for Africa. This Farmer Support Initiative for Africa, or called FOSCA, is going to build farmer institutions to be able to advocate for issues that concern them, to be able to share information about new technologies, to be able to, work together and use collective action when it comes to accessing markets and also influencing and shaping policies. Rural radio plays an enormous role. And we are supporting a program in Kenya where they call it Supermarket on the Air. We have helped to develop what is called market, is basically Kenya market information systems, where if you wanted to trade something, you go on the air, on radio, and you say, I've got X amount of grain to sell, and I'm located in this particular zone. Anybody want to trade with me? Is called Seko Hewani. You may not know exactly what that means, but it's supermarket on the air period, which means using the power of rural radio to reach millions. But also, you look at the power of the internet today. And I think that as scientists, we're used to conventional media. There is a social media. that is the YouTube, that is internet, that is, you know, Twitter. It's all kind of things that our youth are actually using today. So we need to retool and use those tools to reach a lot of the youth themselves. And let me end with the media yourselves. For a long time, media is looked at as folks that we give information to. But in fact, media is part of the solution to many of the issues we face. So the media has to be partners with us. So in Agra, I'm sitting here, Director for Communications, we are working with African journalists, African media houses, to let them realize that the greatest thing they can do for Africa right now is to communicate good stories about what's working and get that out to our politicians, to donors around. So I think we have to use all kind of facilities available to us to get the message out. And the message for me is very simple. Good things are happening in African agriculture. A lot of progress is being made, yes. It's a lot of challenges ahead. But people shouldn't forget that Africa is not a basket case.
Well, if you get those youth connected, maybe you can come over here in the United States and help us do the same thing.
We could use it. We'll be glad to.
Anyone else? Okay, well, thank you very, very much for your added attention.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.